Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Game Industry News Game Lounge. We were off for April and, well, off for Easter, I should say. And now I have the ultimate question for you, Vince. Money. Yes or no?
I mean, I would like to ideally live in a cashless, moneyless society, but I don't think that's going to happen. So to avoid dying in a ditch, yes?
So today I really wanted to talk about just live service games, games that have just a treasury of microtransactions. Because what I wanted to look at is, over the years we've heard that games are at a set price, $50 to $60, but games are getting more and more expensive to make, so that's why they have to try to recoup their prices with microtransactions. So I wanted to bring to the debate after Easter, which you and I talked about a little bit over the holiday, was should we pay $80 for a game if it means no microtransactions and season passes and things of that nature?
Oh boy. Yeah, it's an interesting conversation to have, but I know you promoted the idea of, like, maybe we just pay $80. I promoted the idea of indie games know to price their stuff accordingly and still sometimes manage a relative amount of success. I don't think it would kill Nintendo to sell Breath of the Wild. Well, no. Zelda Tears of the Kingdom. I was going to call it Breath of the Wild 2, but that's not what it's named. It wouldn't kill them to sell Tears of the Kingdom at $60. I simply do not believe that it would impact their bottom line that much. At the same time, you have games like Resident Evil 4 that introduced microtransactions, I think, after the game had been out for 2, maybe 3 weeks, with those exclusive upgrade tickets, which are a whole separate matter, I suppose. But I don't know, what games in particular did you have in mind? Because, like, Resident Evil 4 is very fresh in mind because I had spent 30 hours across just apparently, like, 5 days. I played that game like a part-time job.
I mean, I don't really have exact games that come to mind. Like, there wasn't one game that really, like, pissed me off to the point that I wanted to become grumpy old man who yells at clouds about it. But we have games like live service, I think, is, like, really guilty about it, especially like Evolve, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon,
Destiny 2.
Oh, there's Marvel's Avengers, which got shut down. I think that was the one that made me go, what the hell? Because, like, they had a suit that came out for Thor that was the exact same as another one but it was just minus the helmet and cost $15 for a cosmetic.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that are like that are kind of chasing that Fortnite high, where...
But Fortnite's free to play, which is where, like, it boggles my mind, where you can charge $60 for a game and then slap a whole bunch of microtransactions in there, because at that point, for me at least, that screams greed.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
That's not, well, we made a game free, we're trying to recoup our costs and maybe make a healthy profit. That is, I want every stone here to bleed.
Yeah, Overwatch was especially successful, which was wild given the fact that, you know, they had just an insane amount of microtransactions. And even though Blizzard was making money hand over fist with Overwatch, they still decided to shut down the original game to force out Overwatch 2, which, what we were originally told, was Overwatch 2 was supposed to be like a story campaign, but it's really just Overwatch 1.5, because now they're just adding the new characters to that instead, and there's still no story mode, from what I understand. Like, that still hasn't happened, when that was originally the entire, like, reason for being for that. Platinum Games had one that shut down, I think, a month and a half ago, Babylon's Fall. Mm-hmm. It was another game where you have a buy-in cost, and then they still shut it down.
Apex, I think it is.
Oh yeah, Apex Legends.
What they're doing is pissing off a lot of players because they're coming out with a new one, but they're shutting down the old one unless you buy the second one, even though it's not out yet, because then you can play the first one until the second one comes out. So and the where I wanted to talk about this, because you know, you and I have harped on microtransactions for years, but every time I see a game company executive get approached about this is always, well, our operating costs are increased. It's more expensive to make games now. It takes much more time. So we're only charging $60, which hasn't in gone up with inflation and everything of that nature. So like, that's where it kind of got to my mind of, if we were to pay you $70 a game, $10 extra a unit, $80 a game, $20 extra a unit, could the microtransactions go away? Because then we're paying you more for the game to help offset this. Because I have my issues with live service and just any games where if you shut down a server to it, I can't play the game and anything I bought in that game is completely gone. Like that is a problem.
Well, yeah, I agree. But where I will kind of... Where I'll disagree with you on is I don't think paying $10 or $20 extra would dissuade them from introducing microtransactions in any capacity. And I don't exactly have a lot of proof behind this, but I will offer some logical threads. They've started charging $10 more for games. Like, I know EA, Ubisoft, all of those. When the PS5 dropped, they're already doing $70 games, and they're still riddled with microtransactions. Some of them are worse than what the $60 games were already offering in terms of just being lousy with microtransactions and, you know, various live service features. I don't think giving an additional $10 on top of that to these publishers will actually make any difference. And the other, like, dividing line I will throw in here, just, you know, just from how I'm thinking about it, most Western developers aren't being paid any more right now. So the money is going primarily to the top rung. Like, they're going to the publisher. They're not actually paying the people who make the games anymore. It's still the same crap. Now, there are exceptions. Like, from what I understand, Nintendo is raising the wage for all of their developers, which that is excellent. Fantastic for Nintendo. Like, that is a company that will do just screw up after screw up. And I'll admit that, like, I am a massive Nintendo fan, so sometimes I tend to overlook the things that they screw up, but, like, they're extremely heavy-handed with their trademark and copyright, you know, arguments and everything like that. The fight over Smash Brothers was just obscene. At least they're wanting to reinvest in the people who make their games possible. I don't think executives at a publishing company getting paid more really matters that much. You know, you can crap on me a little bit of this for this if you want, but like, if Elon Musk had nothing to do with Tesla anymore, I think that company would do better. Many of these companies do not need that person at the top rung doing all this random, you know, BS. They don't need their Bobby Kotick's. They don't need... They would still be doing fine. I don't think that paying them more would actually make them not do this. It's too much of a golden goose for them to give up on, I feel.
So when going back to what you said about Nintendo, about how they make mistakes after mistakes, but then they come and do right things. So essentially what you're saying is, of all the game publishers, they are the tub thumping of game publishers.
They're the chumbawamba of game publishers.
And no, I don't disagree with you. In fact, there is a line of thinking within business at the current moment that the modern CEO is not beneficial. And it has become an issue where I I believe at the rate that AAA is going, that they're, I guess, slightly cannibalizing themselves, but also they're driving themselves into just not, they're driving people to the indie market.
Right.
My example would be Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Breakpoint. So Ubisoft took this game, which, did you ever play any of the old Ghost Recons?
I mean, I probably played some on the PS2, but I really don't remember them because, I mean, that was a long time ago for me.
The premise of Ghost Recon is essentially it's Rainbow Six, where that difficulty where if you get shot once or twice, you lose a soldier. But you have slightly futuristic toys, like you have heartbeat monitors, drones for surveillance. It's a very tactical sort of third person shooter. So Ubisoft decided we're going to take this game. We're going to turn it into the Ubisoft sandbox, for there is only one. Then they also put in a uncomfortable amount of DLC of just stupid things to begin with, and the game wasn't even fully functioning. It kept breaking and glitching. And then they sent out a letter saying that we've taken fans' criticisms to heart, and they laid out this whole schedule of updates are going to do. And then not too long after, they got into NFTs, and they had it was 1,000 of these black helmet and mask combos that you could buy or earn after you reached like X amount of time. And people just didn't take it. Do you know how many they sold out of the 1,000 NFTs?
I'm not really sure.
15.
Oh, nice. Because didn't they introduce like their own specific currency? Yeah, quartz. That's what they called it. So they not only introduced they not only utilized the infamous roadmap, but they also decided to add in NFTs. Crap show.
And the problem ended up becoming that this game wasn't what people wanted in a Ubisoft sandbox game. So you weren't appealing to them there. And it was a far cry from what Ghost Recon fans wanted, because they're used to a very specific game. So then no one really wanted to play it, and they ended up shutting their servers down, I believe, like 2 years after the game came out. And it's kind of upsetting for me, at least looking back, because I am old enough to remember where the roots of the Ubisoft sandbox were created.
I mean, it was Far Cry, wasn't it?
Far Cry 2, to be exact. Yeah. Far Cry 2 was awesome. It was revolutionary.
The one I never played.
Far Cry 3 did improve it a little bit. They added a lot more verticality, and it was a well done game. But then Ubisoft started doing, we're going to make Assassin's Creed like this now. We're going to make Tom Clancy games like this now. And then, because they essentially took all these distinct properties and formed them into a homogenous blob, which then they decided, we need to slap season passes on there. We need to slap DLC on there. We need to put in all these weapon customizations you have to buy. We need to all these different characters to unlock. Or if you need to buy experience or buy these weapons, you can unlock them like a plebe and play 50 hours to unlock this chain gun. Or, you know, you could just slide us a fiver and get it now. And I don't feel like that's a necessary step to a game, especially when you do it over every game. Like, people have a finite amount of money. And I don't see how this people can in the boardroom can be like, yeah, I know we keep doing this, but let's do this, but more. Surely they'll pay us more money than they actually have.
Yeah, and like not only do people have finite amounts of money, but they also have finite amounts of time. And the more they started leaning into microtransactions, the grindier a lot of their games got. A friend of mine is massively into Assassin's Creed games, but the more they started leaning into the RPG mechanics, the more he started getting exhausted by them because he just felt like it required too much grinding to get where he wanted to go. Yeah, I'm not sure why Ubisoft tries to do that for every game, but apparently it's been working out for them to some extent. I have no idea. It's one of those things where it seems like there's room for infinite amounts of growth until all of a sudden it just doesn't.
Yeah, I think the thing with Ubisoft is I would still make an argument that most of their sales are legacy. I bought Far Cry 3, 4, and 5. You know what? I might as well buy Far Cry 6. I like Far Cry games. Or I like Assassin's Creed. I'm into Assassin's Creed. You know, the new Assassin's Creed's out. I'm going to buy it. And I feel so much of it is because of that. I know I even picked up 6 because it was like deeply, deeply discounted. And I'm at that point now where I can tell I'm retreating into not only a JRPG hole, but also just a classic game hole, because I know when I get this game, I can play from start to finish, and whatever items and stuff I get is because I earned it or I knew where to find the wiki.
Right.
Like, it's not, well, I have to go against these people online who are throwing $50 a month at this game and I just flat out refuse to do it, so I can't have fun. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, like, why I don't like a lot of online multiplayer games, especially like Call of Duties and Battlefields, because you will get the people who will just splurge and buy like all these different attachments and better weapons, and just, I can't, because especially if I'm paying $60 for a game. This was one thing the game Evolve did really bad. Do you remember Evolve?
I mean, I remember it, yeah.
I remember when that game came out, one of my buddies was like, you should get this game. And I'm like, no. He brought it over. He's like, are you having fun? And I'm like, no. He's like, surely, man, you're just being a grouch. The game is going to take off. Everyone's going to love it. Well, it turns out when you make a $60 game that has connectivity issues and then immediately drops with $60 in digital content to buy as on day one, you make a lot of people angry. And the game itself got shut down, I believe, 2.5 years after it came out.
Right.
Because it's day one seems to be a bit early to say, yeah, we know you just paid $60, but how would you like to spend the entire price of the game for some cosmetics now?
Well, and like, there are some times where I don't necessarily like disagree with, okay, it's just cosmetics. When it comes to cosmetics, I don't necessarily care. I don't play a lot of online shooters anymore. Because like, I remember playing Evolve when it first came out. It was okay. It's the asymmetric, like, competitive genre isn't exactly, well, I guess it wasn't really competitive. Some people tried to play it competitive. I think I even made a Twitch, like, layout for someone who dedicated themselves to that game. That went really well. He's working in a factory now. I don't really care about cosmetics, because, like, for example, Monster Hunter. Like, Monster Hunter Rise has a lot of cosmetics. It has its primary expansion, Sunbreak. And, like, the base game will keep you busy for 100 or so hours. The expansion will probably keep you busy for, you know, 200, 300 plus. I think right now I'm up to 454 hours on Steam in Monster Hunter Rise, including Sunbreak. And I have the game on Switch also. So I have played a lot of Monster Hunter. They have a wide variety of cosmetics, like from armors to hair to, like, they introduced layered weapons. So, like, they have a thing that you can turn your greatsword into a little dragon, and the blade is the dragon breathing fire. And then when you do your biggest attack, it squeaks. That's adorable. I don't really care that it costs, like, $2 to get the funny greatsword. But there are... It's because I don't necessarily find that more predatory than, like, other methods of introducing these things. There's no fear of missing out. What I really have the issue with is an element of FOMO, and you see that a lot with Destiny 2. Because they have that Eververse shop, and when they pop something in there, you don't know when it's going to be coming back or if it'll be coming back. So you can grind the hell out of whatever currency you need in order to buy that shader that you really desperately want, but you could also drop, you know, $10 on it and try and get the shader that way. It's very similar to those like clothing drops that some things do, or like the secret lair drops that Magic the Gathering does. By introducing a time limit, you automatically incentivize and increase FOMO. And preying upon that is what I have a big issue with, because those with addictive personalities might be more willing to, you know, drop the cash just to get that one thing that they want, versus, you know, once they introduce the DLC for, like, Monster Hunter, it's always there. It's just, get your funny, squeaky greatsword.
And now we have to go back to Chumbawamba, because remember when Nintendo did that with the Super Mario All-Stars 3D Collection?
Yeah, that was a stupid play. I believe you can actually still find copies of that game, too, by the way. Like, it wasn't this big, limited release. The fact that they did that with the Mario All-Stars, I actually don't remember the exact name of the Switch game that had 64 Sunshine and Galaxy.
It's Super Mario 3D All-Stars.
Okay. They did that with that, and they also did it with a, like, port of the first Fire Emblem.
Right.
For just whatever reason. I missed it too. I mean, but you know what? We're not missing very much. The first Fire Emblem isn't really that good. And I say this as someone who completed the original Fire Emblem. It's not that good. Gaiden was even worse. How that game managed to get a third is beyond me, but it did. And that they remade that for Fire Emblem 12, and that version was okay, even though I couldn't understand any of the dialogue because they never brought it to the United States. It was only in Japan. And I think Fire Emblem 11 was Shadow Dragon. That's the version of Fire Emblem 1 that I think is okay. That one there. It's kind of like how I wouldn't recommend anyone play Gaiden. Go play Echoes instead. The remakes actually do the games way better justice than what their NES iterations did. That's why I'm really hoping that they do one for Genealogy, because that one is, like, my second favorite in the series. Anyway, what the hell was I talking about again?
So talk to us about Resident Evil 4, because you mentioned that they introduced a predatory microtransaction just for the sake of it. And I'm genuinely curious what it is.
Okay, so they started off, they had, like, day one DLC for, like, costumes, which that's whatever. Like, every Capcom game does that, and they're just always there. So I don't really care about the whole FOMO element of that. What I think is really weird is they introduced these gold upgrade tickets. Now, have you ever played Resident Evil 4? Because that'll determine how much I need to explain.
Yes, I played it on...
It's been on everything.
Yeah, GameCube or PS2.
Okay. So, you know how you could upgrade your guns just using the money that you find in-game? Like, using the pesetas?
Yeah.
So, while you play through the game, I think in, like, Chapter 7 or 8... the merchant will have an exclusive upgrade ticket in his trade inventory. Because in the remake, the merchant will have, or yeah, the merchant has side quests you can do, and those award you with spinels, the little like pink jewel that you would get just by, you know, randomly finding it throughout the world in the original Resident Evil 4. Now it's a currency that you trade with the merchant. So if you do all the side quests up to Chapter 7, you'll have the ability to purchase an exclusive upgrade ticket for 30 spinels. And that lets you get the exclusive upgrade for whatever gun you want immediately without having to fully upgrade the gun first. Because normally you have to upgrade power all the way, you have to upgrade reload capacity, and then you can do the exclusive upgrade, and it usually costs a lot of pesetas. This, you don't even have to pay the peseta cost for the exclusive upgrade. It's just the ticket. So that was really cool. The first time I played through the game, I did that to my pistol, and then my pistol had a 5-time chance of critting when I shot people in the head. And like a crit is the head explodes. So that's phenomenal. It made the gun 5 times more likely to only use one bullet to kill an enemy. It's great. Then I used it on the riot gun, and then I basically used nothing but the riot gun for the rest of the game. So these exclusive tickets that they have for sale, which let me take a look here. They're $3 for one, $7 for three, and $10 for 5 of these tickets. So these are just tickets that are just in your inventory when you start the game. You don't need to talk to the merchant. You don't need to do any of his side quests. They're just available, and you can get an exclusive upgrade the first time you see a merchant in the game, I assume. I haven't actually used any of them because, you know, I already beat the game on professional with an S+ ranking, so I don't need the exclusive upgrade tickets because I already have cat ears. And if you put cat ears on Leon, that gives you infinite ammo. That's just how life works. So I'm guessing that this was them kind of capitalizing on the difficulty. Because, I mean, the remake is a little bit harder than the original. And you use a lot more ammo in this one, too, for whatever it's worth. But if you need to upgrade 5 guns throughout the course of Resident Evil 4, you probably just need to, like, learn the mechanics of the game better. Like, I only fully upgraded 2 guns my first way through, and that's all I felt I needed to fully upgrade. I didn't even carry 5 guns with me, because that takes up so much room in Leon's attaché case, which, for those who haven't played Resident Evil 4, your guns take up the same space in Leon's like carrying case as like your ammo, your healing items, or whatever other random thing you want to carry with you. So carrying more guns means less room for ammo. And when things like shotgun ammo don't stack very high, and you need to carry multiple stacks of them, if you're using the riot gun a lot, like I did, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you're just going to be getting ammo for a whole bunch of different guns, which necessitates even more room in the case. I can't fathom someone needing to upgrade 5 guns in the course of one playthrough. That's ridiculous. They're so superfluous and unnecessary that I don't know why they introduced them to the game.
With transactions, one game, hearing you talk, that comes to mind was, I decided that I haven't played a basketball game in many, many years. So I picked up NBA 2K21. And the game itself will not play if you don't have a strong internet connection or any internet connection at all. It just flat out, it will not let you play the game.
Well, yeah, always online DRM sucks. That's a huge problem with 2K.
And doing your little, I was doing a career mode. Every time you would go into a game while it was loading, it would show you actual legitimate commercials for actual items. And then, like, in a little home world where you could go, like, the Gatorade was involved. There was billboards that had actual advertising. Like, they're literally, get the bleep button ready, Vince. They are literally fucking advertising to you while playing a video game. You're trying to escape your reality, and you're just getting your escapist reality is getting showed Gatorade, G5, or whatever they're at now, sports drinks.
Oh, and, is it like Game Fuel? I don't know what G5 is.
No, I was just being sarcastic. Gatorade had like billboards everywhere. Like they had.
I thought you were talking about 5G, and I had to go get my tinfoil hat.
No, but
prevent the government from reading my brainwaves.
Like I think Verizon had a billboard in there, and there was another. I think Red Bull had some advertising in there, like sponsored clothes.
Well, I know why they were showing you Verizon. It's because your internet connection was spotty, and they're like, "Get on Fios or something, man."
I personally do not agree with that. Like, if I'm paying $60 for a game, I should not also be getting you money through your advertising, views, and all these transactions. Like, there are so many things there. Some of them were the more inconspicuous, or I should say innocuous, clothes that didn't really matter. It's just you want your guy to look fresh. But then there were other ones where you could pay to get energy to do extra training to make your guy actually better. And
that's a mobile game mechanic,
right? And the grinding in NBA was
grinding in a sports game.
And I will be honest. Afterwards, I got a slightly older Madden game and a slightly older NHL game. Not nearly as bad. FIFA's not as bad. Like NBA wow. Just went all off with it. And it boggles my mind. Now, where I get frustrated at Madden is that they've essentially strangled the competition, and rather than trying to make the game innovative, they try to polish the graphics, like every rogue texture of a graphic, and then they want you to buy Madden Ultimate Team, which is you pay to get different, like buying packs of people to play online, to use online.
Oh, so it's loot boxes.
Yeah.
Okay. Loot boxes should not be in any full price game. I kind of feel like they shouldn't even be in free to play games. I loathe them. It's just gambling. That's all it is.
It is. And I think, again, like if it's free to play, I at least understand the argument of we did not charge you for this game, but it cost us money to make this game. We need to make that money. I understand like that. I understand the business model. But if I pay you $40, $60, $70 for a game, I should not be having to make a $15 to $30 a month investment just to make sure I can be competitive in the game that I'm playing. That just should not be a thing. And that's kind of where I get back to my original point is, like I would tell a developer, if I pay you $20 more for this game, I want you to take that out. Because if I'm paying you $80 for a game, I should not have to pay you X amount of money every month. And I think it also bothers me is so many things are, what's the phrase? They are the as a service model.
Right.
Not everything needs to be a subscription service. Not everything needs me to have a monthly commitment to you with money for services and whatever.
Well, and that's the thing. Like by using that kind of model, by preying on FOMO, they make so much money. And the problem is when one of them makes that much money, all of them want to make that much money forever. And there's eventually going to be like a giving point where either all of these things fail, we have a like market implosion or something. Cause like they're doing ads in, 2K games primarily because they felt like they can get away with doing that, Slapping the brand everywhere is a great way to subsidize things and make more money for the publisher. I highly doubt the developers are being paid a single dime of any of that, even though they're the ones who are being forced to implement all of it.
Well, what makes sports such a special instance and why they can get away with so much more than your general game
CTEs?
No. Okay. Union agreements. Like Madden, for example, Madden NFL, they have an agreement with the NFL Players Association that they, and only they, can use the names and likeness of the NFL players.
Oh, yeah. Which means that old thing.
If you make an NFL game now, well, you can't even make an NFL game. You can make a football game, but it has to be all fake teams, all fake players. And unfortunately, when they didn't have the stranglehold, the games, they had more competition. Like in the early 2000s, they had ESPN NFL games where you could play the game in first person. Also, ESPN NFL 2K5 made it so that there was a, I don't know if AI would be the right phrase, but there was a, your profile would track every single play that you made and would build a profile based on your tendencies of how often you run versus pass, whether you like to go left, right, or center. And you could online, like, trade your profiles with your friends. So even if you weren't like online at the moment, you could play your friend's profile and a computer would play more or less like your friend would. That I thought that was unique. I mean, in like the early 2000s, late 90s, you had NFL Quarterback Club, which had some really good gameplay. But then you also had Blitz the League, where it was like your people would get put in prison. It was like an NFL Street, which was more like ad absurdum, where like you could like run off walls and things like that. And Madden itself had to keep getting better because it had to compete with these. They tightened up. Now they don't have to do that. Basketball is now the same way. There used to be NBA Street, not there anymore. 2K used to have an EA rival, which was, I cannot remember what it's called now, but Electronic Arts had a NBA game in addition to 2K. So 2K and EA had to keep doing better to get people to buy their basketball game. That's not the case anymore. It is just 2K. Because there's no competition, they can now just be like, well, if you want to play football, you have to buy Madden, which means we're just offline. It's whatever. If you're one of them loner peasants, whatever, we'll give you like a bare bones, barely functional career mode. And we're just putting all of this in the Madden team. If you want to have fun and play with people, you need to buy all these like essentially loot boxes. And I think what also gets frustrating about these microtransactions is they also are stacking on top of your other fees, which is your internet connection. And if you have to pay for any service like Nintendo's online, PlayStation Plus. So now you're just like stacking fees on top of fees on top of fees. And it's backbreaking. And I think I would argue it's also probably why maybe people don't have as diverse of a gaming diet as we do, because you and I have talked about this, where we know numerous people who all they play is two games. They play like Madden. One of my buddies, for example, all he plays is Madden and Call of Duty. That is it. Full stop. That is all he plays. Versus you and I, we play what? 6, 10, 12 different titles every year?
Oh, I mean, I probably play more than that. Like, my column has me going over, like, some Randy. Randy.
Yeah,
I go over some Randy. Like, you know, this time I'm going to go over, like, Randy Marsh. Then I might go, yeah. I go over some random indie game, like, every couple of weeks. So, I mean, just in indie games alone, I'm probably, you know, 25, 26 per year. And that's on top of like whatever JRPGs that I'm playing, just because that's my favorite genre, RPGs and strategy. That's primarily what I enjoy. Then every so often I'll poke my head out and play something like, you know, Resident Evil, something like that. But yeah, we play a ton of things. We have like a huge variety, which I'm going to take a moment and plug a game. 9 Years of Shadows. It's like a little Metroidvania. The game kind of kicks ass. Everyone who listens to this should probably give that a shot. It's on Steam. It's great.
All two people in the bot from Lithuania.
Yeah, the bot from Lithuania should buy it and play it too. It's actually really cool. But like, there's no random microtransactions in it. pretty much anything I can think of from like NT Creates. It doesn't have random BS microtransactions. Like sometimes they'll add DLC after the game is out. Like I know for the Blaster Master series, they introduce like additional characters and stuff, but that's actually more content to a game you enjoy, so why not, right? But, you know, not every game has to be subject to this hell of, oh, let's monetize absolutely everything. Here's tickets, here's cosmetics, here's like a get good button. Though, you know what? Before we even started this conversation, I had a game in mind where they added DLC that was basically an I win button. Like, it unlocks everything. And I can't remember what game it was now. I guess it doesn't matter that much. But, if there's, and mind you, there's no shame in primarily playing, like, Call of Duty and Madden, if those are what you enjoy. There's no shame in that. Just quit subsidizing bad market practices in, you know, buying whatever player packs for FIFA or Madden or what have you. Like, stop doing that. And also, wrestling games have gone to absolute crap ever since 2K got them. Like, I know 2K's had it for probably 10 years at this point, but like, 2K20 was one of the worst wrestling games I'd ever seen. Like, it is a far cry from, you know, WCW versus NWO or WWF No Mercy. Like, just a shameful mess compared to what we used to get.
Well, you have to think, because it wasn't the
well, yeah, they were competing companies then. Like, it was AKI, I think, was making, like, the ones that I really liked, but then you also had Yuke's.
THQ should have been making it.
Well, I'm talking the developer, not the publisher.
I thought they did both.
Hold on, I'll look.
Yeah, I'm looking too.
So for WCW versus NWO World Tour, THQ published it. Aki and Asmic Ace Entertainment developed it.
Okay, and for WCW, NWO Revenge, THQ published. Developer was Sin Sophia.
Sin Sophia is AKI.
Mm.
They were either eaten up by or changed their name to Sin Sophia. Like, they probably went public or something. But the only thing I know that Sin Sophia has been doing is, like, style savvy games. And I was like, oh, hey, these are the guys who made WCW versus NWO. What the hell is this?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, wrestling games were really good when THQ had them. And then when THQ went belly up. But no, man, like, honestly, I miss...
A lot of stuff was great when THQ had them. Let's be real. Volition? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Volition had a lot of really entertaining things and just... Because I think they had Red Faction and Saints Row. And, like, Saints Row the Third is probably my favorite Grand Theft Auto-like of all. It was absolutely ridiculous, and you could whack people with a dildo bat. Come on, that's funny.
You couldn't do that again until Yakuza Like a Dragon.
Yeah, that game is also really... Yakuza Like a... The Yakuza series as a whole is just great. Which, I know you said you were playing Like a Dragon. Did you beat it yet?
No, I so I'm at this point where I keep, it gets like grindy and like I have a lot of things going on. So like, I'm just like, I'm so stressed. Like, I'm having problems playing games. Cause like, I need to finish Tales of Arise. I'm almost done with it.
I know this problem all too well,
but honestly, dude, cause when I booted up Far Cry 6, which again, I don't want anyone to take what I'm saying negative against the game, against like the voice acting, because I mean, they got Giancarlo Espinosa, the man's awesome. It's just, the game just feels less experimental and more just filed down to like its most boring core. But I miss booting up a game, seeing a menu that has just my menu options. I don't like how when I boot up games now, there's just this bleh of new DLC, new gun, limited edition, all this bull, all up and down the sides of the menu. It's just like, That and legal agreements. Like, I should not have to read a 6-page legal agreement just to play a game.
Well, yeah, because you need to get your lawyer involved, have him read it, and then make sure that you're not signing something that says that every time you die in the game, you die for real. I mean, that was the entire problem with Sword Art Online. Had they actually read the legal agreement, everyone would have been fine.
Or you end up part of the human Sentai pad.
Ooh, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why the bot from Lithuania comes here for my random South Park deep cuts.
There you go. Yeah, man, I don't know. I'm not sure that they're ever going to wind up like trying to reduce the amount of money that they make. I think at this point it's just don't pre-order. If there's a cosmetic that you really like, don't buy into FOMO. Because when the game is gone, it's just going to be gone forever. Because, again, that's why I like Monster Hunter. I can just play that. If I wanted to, I could bust out my 3DS and play Monster Hunter 4 right now with people online. They cut off connection to the eShop, but, like, online games still work. Those games still work. I could still play with people. There are still people actively playing Monster Hunter 4U. That game, I think, is over 10 years old now. If I want to play Monster Hunter World, I can jump back to my PS4, boot it up on the PC. If I wanted to play Rise, I can...
I can't say crap about playing a 10-year-old game. I'm trying to platinum Last Remnant now for the fourth time.
That game can burn in hell. Yeah. I don't care. That game has absolutely ridiculous platinum requirements.
So, I guess my final question to you... Do you see a point where the current trend of microtransactions dies, stops, drastically changes, goes into witness protection and lives in Mexico?
I mean, they won't go away. I know that for a fact. The only thing that would make them stop entirely would be legislating it, and that would require a hand as heavy as what happened in Europe to kind of cut the head off that Hydra.
I think it would also take legislators who actually understood what a microtransaction in a video game was.
Well, yeah, because they're just surprise mechanics.
Well, also, I mean, most of the legislators we have remember picking up a Bazooka Joe comic at the Five and Dime for a shekel.
Okay, so... for a shekel, huh? They're in Israel, are they? So, man, there's not a lot of places to go after that. Like, yeah, they're too old. This gerontocracy that we have is ridiculous, and we need term limits or something so we get people who actually know what the hell's going on in there. We need for people who aren't obviously bought and paid for to be the ones who explain things to our people who are too old and or stupid. Because, mind you, these people went to Harvard. A lot of them either believe we're extremely stupid or they are extremely stupid. And there's no in between when it comes to these people. And yeah, I think it would take them actually doing something to, like, work on, you know, loot box mechanics, which I think are the worst. Loot boxes and, you know, timed availability.
Yeah, artificial scarcity.
Yes, artificial scarcity is the bugbear in this almost entirely. Oh, get this now or you'll never have it again. It's a rainbow shader that covers your spaceman armor in tiny penises or something. I don't know. I haven't played Destiny 2 in forever. That game wore me the hell out with its Eververse crap, so I just decided to stop playing the game.
And I'm going to leave with this.
Tiny penis.
There's something that's getting edited out of the Gen podcast.
Oh, I'm the one editing it. I might leave that in just to see.
I think I'd be more willing to pay for a shooting game if it had more dubstep guns.
I can understand that. Like, I think when it comes down to it, I would rather pay $70 or $80 for a game and then have it be complete. I just do not, I don't trust them. I don't trust them without someone forcing the hands of a publisher. The publisher's entire goal is to extract as much capital out of the people who want to buy the product as possible. And like, it took Capcom getting a lot of flack for all of its day one DLC with, I think it was Street Fighter versus Tekken. Because they had like a whole bunch of disc locked DLC when the game dropped. So like there was day one DLC and they said, oh yeah, we worked on this after the game had already gone gold, but then it was all found on disc. So like there was a massive revolt that I believe that game might've been a failure. I don't really remember. It was a while ago, but they kind of calmed down their DLC practices after that. But now they're starting to introduce things that just, why do they exist? Like the exclusive upgrade tickets. Why are you selling these? You could already get two just by playing the game normally. But yeah, if you give them $3, you can max out one of your guns in Chapter 2. It won't do you any good. You still haven't upgraded the power. Go earn some pesetas, Leon. You fucking lazy asshole. That's going to get cut.
Well, everyone, thank you for joining us for the Gen Podcast. We'll be bringing these out to you frequently now that the holidays have passed, hopefully. And we do look forward to, I do want to point you to the Gen Shop. There should be links on the website, GameIndustryNews.com. Our own Vincent here has designed some gaming attire for you. Additionally, we do look forward to, at some point, getting a Twitch stream going, should budgeting and technology allow. It's been difficult with the graphics cards the way they are, but we are glad to be back. We should be back until I get fired. So we'll see you next time.